This is Econoday's Economist Roundtable. I am Ann Picker, Econoday's Chief Economist. With me today are Jeremy Hawkins and Mark Pender. Jeremy covers Europe and the UK, while Mark covers the US. This is the season for gross domestic product data to be announced by countries around the world. Indeed, already there is news from China, the Eurozone, the UK, and the US. Next week, most of the rest of Europe reports, along with Japan. To track these data, you need to know the different measures that are used for the same data. For example, the US uses seasonally adjusted annual rates, while most of the rest of the world uses quarterly change and/or annual change. For example, U.S. first quarter growth was 0.5% seasonally adjusted annual rate. The Eurozone grew 0.55% quarter on quarter. So if you calculate the Eurozone's growth on an annualized basis, it grew 2.2% compared to the U.S.'s 0.5%. Similarly, the U.K. grew at an annualized pace of 1.4%. On a quarter-over-quarter basis, the U.S. grew only 0.13%. The Eurozone was 0.55% and the UK 0.4%. China's main measure for GDP is the change from a year ago. China grew 6.7% in the first quarter when compared with the same quarter a year ago. On that basis, the Eurozone was up 1.6%, the UK grew 2.1%, and the U.S. still lagged at 2.0%. During the past week, both the Bank of Japan and the Reserve Bank of Australia announced their policy decisions. The Bank of Japan confounded expectations by leaving monetary policy unchanged, despite having revised its growth and inflation forecasts downward and downside risks having increased further. The announcement followed a rather sad group of economic data for March that, with the exception of industrial production, underlined the lackluster consumer sector, especially. And the latest CPI data indicated that deflation continues unabated. But the yen soared on the news and continues to climb still, while equities tumbled. The decline in stocks and the increase in yen continued into this week, even though Japanese markets are closed for the Golden Week holidays this week and will be closed today, tomorrow, and Thursday. Although industrial production increased in March, it is set for a turnaround in April thanks to the earthquakes that hit the manufacturing area of southern Japan. The downturn is reflected in the April PMI data, which were below the 50 break-even point. And today, the Reserve Bank of Australia also caused a stir, but for a different reason. It unexpectedly lowered its cash rate by 25 basis points to a record 1.75%. The reason was the latest inflation report that indicated first quarter CPI was up just 1.3% on the year. The RBA's inflation target range is 2 to 3%. The Aussie dollar tumbled and is currently down about 2% for the day. In its statement, though, the RBA cited the recent climb in the currency as a source for worry. Jeremy, what's new in Europe?
Okay, thanks, Anne. Well, I guess however you measure them, markets are still going to concentrate upon difference in growth rates between the big countries, and it would appear to be the case that the much better than expected referred to from the Eurozone has certainly given the euro something of a boost, and I'm quite sure the ECB won't be too happy with current levels of its currency. Nonetheless, I think going back to this GDP figure, this is the new one, the so-called preliminary flash GDP that Eurostat decided to release around about 15 days or so in advance of its traditional old flash measure. That showed a surprisingly large 0.6% rounded anyway, quarterly on quarterly growth rate. Now that's about twice what the PMI surveys were indicating, which is quite interesting, I think, in the sense that it really does suggest, at least for the first quarter, there's been some genuine decoupling between what the soft or anecdotal data are saying and what the hard figures themselves are reporting. Now, it's going to be important, I think, because we've had confirmation, at least from the manufacturing side, of a soft April PMI. We'll get the final figures on the PMI for the composite output index, the main number that markets get excited about. That'll be out tomorrow. They look like they're going to be soft again as well. So the question now is whether or not this decoupling which took place in the first quarter is going to be reversed and we'll get the linkage being re-established for the second quarter. Or otherwise, it's the case perhaps that the big focus we've had on these PMIs might start to fade a little bit. It's going to be interesting anyway. Certainly something to keep an eye on. Elsewhere then, out of Europe, we had the flash HICP, the inflation number for April, which kind of confirmed, I suppose, what we were talking about a few weeks ago when we suggested that the Easter distortions led to an artificially high inflation number for March. That was duly unwound when we got the April figures coming out. So the rate went from minus 0.2% to 0.0% in March, then back down to minus 0.2% in April. And the big swings in there came out of services, and particularly the holiday type sectors, which really does suggest that vacations had an important impact. So bottom line there is, say, don't necessarily place too much weight upon the headline data. You've got to look at the details in this, and they really suggest that inflation, both on a headline basis and on an underlying basis in the Eurozone, are pretty well heading sideways at the moment. That said, it's going to be interesting looking at upcoming numbers because in addition to the stronger than expected GDP, there are also some tentative indications that ECB policy may be beginning to have some impact on inflationary expectations. The EU Commission's Economic Sentiment Index released last week for April, that showed all its three measures of expected inflation moving higher. Industry, the measure, hit a five-month high. We saw a fourth consecutive rise coming through in services and the consumer inflation number as well. That wasn't up as much, but nonetheless, it was still moving in the right direction. So tentative signs there, perhaps sectors are beginning to respond to the ECB's easing. And just to sort of add a little bit more weight to that, the German GfK guys, they came out with their latest survey. And interestingly, within that, they found was a decline to a record new low in a propensity to save. Well, why is that important? Well, perhaps because it reflects the fact that negative interest rates may be starting to impact consumer behavior now. Clearly, if you're not being anything to save, you might just as well go out and spend. And if that is the case, then it kind of suggests that perhaps this ECB negative deposit rate is beginning to have an impact. I should say at the outset that at this stage, it's really just a case that there's a number of large corporates who are being charged a fee to make deposits at banks. But there's been increasing talk about these fees being introduced for households as well. It may be that which has, say, prompted some kind of pickup in prospective consumer spending. It's going to be something to watch anyway. Elsewhere, what have we got? Mentioned the UK pound under pressure at the moment, certainly against the euro anyway. That's partly due to just the euro's strong numbers as we saw before, also due to a slowdown in the UK. And mentioned the GDP number for the first quarter. That was 0.4% on a quarter-on-quarter basis, so in line with expectations. But nonetheless, that's still the weakest we've seen for some considerable while. And within that, only services actually grew. They're up 0.6%. So that may be seen by some people as further evidence of Brexit concerns hitting economic activity in a number of different sectors. I'll just sort of quickly round off the little bit of politics. It's not relevant at the moment, but it could become so later on. And that's in Spain. They weren't able to form a new government despite ongoing efforts since the end of last year, which means we'll get new elections on June the 26th. At the moment, it looks as if we'll still have some kind of stalemate there, so no proper coalition or working coalition government. Just bear in mind that Spain is the fourth largest Eurozone economy. It contributed about 25% of the increase in Eurozone GDP to the end of last year. And if we do see political uncertainty weighing on Spain's second half of 2016, then it could also act as a bit of a dampener on a Eurozone growth in total as well. Okay, that's my lot.
Jeremy?
Quick question.
Quick question, Jeremy.
Yeah.
Greece seems to be surfacing again. Do you think that's going to have another profound effect, or is people mostly used to it?
Well, yes and yes, I suppose, is sort of a sitting on the fence non-answer. Am I deliberately trying to avoid Greece in recent talks? Because it's the same old issues coming back to the fore again. And essentially, it's trying to get to how they marry the efforts to actually achieve the fiscal targets they've been presented by the various lending bodies with actually what's going on in terms of policy at the moment. As you mentioned, there are discussions ongoing at the moment between the Greece authorities and their principal lenders. There are disagreements on both sides, but the latest information seems to be that they're gradually moving towards some kind of compromise. If it does blow up, then yes, it will hit the euro. But I think by the same token, this thing has been rumbling on for such a long time now that you really do need a major shock if it's going to have a big impact.
Thank you. Mark, what's new in the US?
Well, the U.S., we had 0.5, as you had mentioned, Anne, on the GDP, which was definitely on the soft side. The GDP has definitely been on a downtrend for the last couple of years. Consumer spending has slowed. Business investment has gone into reverse. Inventories are being cut back, and exports are still falling. We don't have much of an impact yet from the depreciation of the dollar. We have a lot of data coming up this week. It's interesting. The big strength of the U.S. economy has been employment, lots of employment. But at the same time, we've had very weak productivity. So that implies that we need more employees to do an equivalent amount of work. So we need to pick up productivity. And you know, it's a double sided coin as productivity. When productivity expands, then demand for actual hands and individual hands and feet go down. And then we have the Econo-Day consensus for the Friday employment report is 200,000, which is right in trend, which is very strong, including the possibility of a downtick in the unemployment rate to 4.9%. But we're getting the productivity numbers, quarterly productivity numbers, on Wednesday, and we're expecting a second straight decline on that. Yesterday we had the ISM report, which I'm going to be asking Jeremy a question in a minute here. I'm setting this up. The ISM report was, the headline wasn't so hot at 50.8, but it's a composite, meaning that it has five separate components, which are, in this case, individually weighted at 20% apiece. And the destocking trend in inventories is pulling that down, as well as a related speeding up in delivery times, which is related to lack of supply among lack of inventory among suppliers. But I have a question now. We had the PMI, which was done by Market Economics earlier on Monday morning, and it showed it still had the same, interestingly enough, the same headline, but the components were much softer. The ISM had strength in new orders and backlog orders, which are, of course, the ultimate measure of demand, whereas the Market Economics PMI had weakness, the lowest in those surveys' history, which are only along this cycle. And the question I have for Jeremy is, when you're talking about the PMIs, are all these from Market Economics?
Yeah, pretty well. I mean, in some cases they're dovetailing in with the sponsors, but yes, at the end of the day, as far as Europe's concerned, they're pretty well all come out of market. The Swiss number is actually slightly different, but in terms of the big ones out of the Eurozone, yes, they're all through market, albeit possibly sponsored by some provider.
And I'm curious, what kind of impact do these PMIs actually have, on the fundamental outlook? Do policymakers actually point to these as reliable measures of future economic activity? And do the markets react strongly to those numbers?
I would say yes, yes, and yes. Which makes what
I could also add in, Jeremy, that certainly the Chinese PMIs have a very strong impact on markets.
Yeah, well, in China, that would make sense because there's a lack of a relative lack of government data. And I was talking with the ISM people, 5 or so years ago in close contact, and they were helping to develop the measure with market economics. And this is really the first cycle around for this group. And what they'll be doing is they'll be going back and they will be modifying how they measure, how they weight the individual components into their composite. They'll track it backwards and make a nice match and then go from there and presume that the future will also see it. But the will also fall into that line. And it's a constant rolling effort. But they are very small relative to government numbers. These are just a few hundred samples of individual purchasers or executives at companies describing month-to-month activity. And it's not a totally terribly reliable form. It's more of a shorthand form. But this market economics is definitely taking off, and its expansion is really very incredible. But here in the U.S., it hasn't even remotely begun to replace the ISM reports. We had the ISM report on Monday for manufacturing. We're going to get the ISM report tomorrow on non-manufacturing. And this report has been one of the strongest on the calendar, consistently showing strength in the economy that maybe has been overstating the strength in the economy. But what we have, I guess, in the U.S., to put it in a nutshell, we have a lot of employment, but we have workers who aren't quite as productive as they need to be, and that's related to business investment. And we see the business investment going down in GDP 2 quarters in a row, and the Fed isn't going to be very happy with that. And even though it's compared to consumer spending, which is still plugging along, they're going to need to see a pickup in business investment, and the economy needs to see a pickup in business investment. We need more equipment, we need more computers, all those kinds of things that make employees stronger and make output stronger, and in the long run make for fewer employees, which is, like I said, which is kind of an...
Thanks, Mark. I think we should wrap it up now. See you next week.